This is our last session of the conference. There will be, I'll make a few closing words at the end, but this is our last major session. This is our stakeholder session. So far, we've heard a number of analyses and third-party perspectives. Now we're going straight to the horse's mouth, and let's hear it from some of the players and institutions and corporations and officials who are participating in the policymaking process. And we will have six people on the session today. They're going to give some short opening presentations, and we're going to maximize the discussion both between and among them, and maybe with some, we'll have some increasingly some questions from the audience over time as well. So I'm going to very quickly say who's going to be, who our panelists are, and we'll move right into it. Our first speaker will be James Love. He's the director of the Consumer Project on Technology. Our second speaker will be Don Pelage from Network Solutions, Inc. Our third speaker is Esther Dyson, the interim chair from ICANN. Our fourth speaker is David Post from the Beasley School of Law at Temple University. Our fifth speaker is Paul Scalise. He's a staff member on the House Committee on Commerce. And our last speaker, our sixth speaker, and there will be a lot of interaction, so it won't be last, is Todd Cohen. He's a vice president for New Media at the Motion Pictures Association of America. So we'll start off right away with James.
Hello. My name is Jamie Love. I work for Ralph, the guy that was just talking, and I work at a consumer group. And I just wanted to spend my time going over a couple of things that Ralph talked about relative to our idea that we think that it would be a good idea to have a charter for ICANN that comes from government. And I want to talk very briefly about that. I think that when we think about ICANN, we think about that's set up to do some technical things about the internet, and people are concerned about, they talked about today, that because ICANN can, you know, whoever controls the root server and these and the other people that manage the main registration service through contracts or whatever could do things like make you invisible on the internet or make you disappear, that's kind of a unique position on the internet and that people are concerned about. So everyone that has an idea about things that could be done about the internet in terms of social policy, like maybe making businesses post their privacy policies, or maybe some people don't like pornography, or some people don't like spam, or there's probably, you know, lots of different theories people would have about what ought to be done to the internet in terms of e-commerce. Well, the concern that maybe they would turn to this body and use this body to enforce policy or police policy is an issue that makes it more interesting and why I think there's so much interest in it. And so the issue comes up is that should ICANN do all these things? And should it become actually the locus for every conceivable scheme people have? Like Hollywood wants people not to use unauthorized copies of music on the internet or something like that. And they want to worry about people. Some people think their copyrights are being violated, so they want people that violate their copyrights to take them off the internet. There's all kinds of different ways people can come at this. Well, our position on this and our thinking on this is that ICANN is not the right body to resolve all of these issues. I mean, I would love it if I was the king of ICANN and I could do my own little personal policies on this, but I might not like the other guy, somebody else being the king or the queen of of ICANN. So our proposal is more or less that that ICANN be limited in what it does. In fact, limited so much that it really becomes almost boring about who sits on the board of directors of ICANN. I mean, if you had a group who is legally limited in such narrow ways that almost nobody would care what they did, in some sense, you would say that this is not the battleground for all of these other issues which are going to come up in the internet. All these issues about how you regulate or don't regulate e-commerce or protect intellectual property rights or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So when we talk about a multilateral charter for ICANN, what we're really talking about is something that would severely limit the areas that ICANN would be considered appropriate to act in and set those out by definitions. And so our idea is it would not become the instrument to make social policy in the area of content or conduct. And I think that people on the board of ICANN say that's not their intention anyhow, if I'm not mistaken. And if there's, it's not as if they've been advertising that that's really their goal. So we don't see that as fundamentally in conflict with some of the things that people have been saying. I think that there are problems that are going to require more of a global approach on the Internet. There are lots of issues that are going to come up. Marketing practices, consumer protection issues, privacy, intellectual property issues are always a big deal for people. And there may be needs to create other types of international institutions or coordination among existing ones or whatever. And there's tons of work going on by all kinds of institutions right now about how to deal with those issues in a wide range of areas. But we think if you take a body which is sort of governance structure is designed to allocate, you know, sort of nerdy stuff about, you know, IP numbers into domain names and stuff like that, you know, we just don't think those are necessarily the right cast of characters to do all of the other things that work. You know, we don't want to sort of see people pile on top of this group all the other types of public policy decisions. And so, you know, that's why we say we'd like to limit it in that sense. Now, I think as Ralph said, that you know, we think having an IP number should be kind of like having a phone, a domain name should be a little bit like having a telephone number, an address, or a phone number. I mean, we wouldn't give the people that assign telephone numbers or addresses the right to say, if we don't like what you do with the business proposition, you won't have an address anymore, or you won't have a telephone number, or, you know, you can't even use your own name or something like that. I mean, that's not how we regulate businesses general or regulate behavior, and we don't really think that we want to use the DNS system as the locus and the point to do that kind of regulation. I think that there's a lot of issues about what happens if ICANN does things that people don't like. What happens if ICANN has meetings that are closed and people aren't happy about that? Or what happens if they were to start engaging in activity that was considered not only non-transparent, but charging excessive fees in terms of the amount of money that they would charge to register in and things like that. We like the idea of a charter as a point of review where you have some opportunity to complain about those kind of things. You have some place to go ask that somebody approve a budget, that you have a chance to look at the budget, that you can actually stop the group from basically using it sort of an unlimited of power to raise money vis-a-vis fees on internet things and keep them in a more modest role. We think that in the area of trademark policy, there's a lot of things that interest that individual consumers have, an interest in that may be different from what maybe certain business interests might have. For example, I know that people have talked about the fact that this morning about how people in the entertainment business want to use information about the ownership of a DNS registration as a way of enforcing copyright. And so they have certain ideas about the privacy or non-privacy or the issues about anonymity in terms of having a domain registration. And there's different theories, too, about the use of famous names and trademark rights and things like that. It's our opinion that issues about trademark policy and privacy policy have a very much a public dimension to them, and that we wouldn't mind a group that had some delegated responsibility to either make some policies or to make recommendations on policies or things like that. If it was a private body, if it was ICANN or ICANN2, or, you know, like not ICANN but some other entity or something like that, we wouldn't mind the idea of them hashing out things, sorting things out, you know, trying to see if they could arrive at consensus or not consensus or things like that. But at the end of the day, we think that these are, just like trademark policy is in countries right now, it's fundamentally a public decision to say that somebody has a legal monopoly on the use of a name. I mean, that's a public decision. And the public in the United States, I'm sure you know, has certain rights in trademark disputes relative to really the free speech and parity and social criticism and things like that. And we'd like also, if there was a charter, to make statements about these things. Now, in terms of how you define a charter, I think, my time's about up, I can just make it very brief here, is that in our idea, if you were to create a charter that was limited for ICON in terms of the scope, and you were to allow other countries to participate in that system of having a charter, that the idea would be that the charter itself would be a strong statement in terms of free speech, limiting the role, the fact that the entity would not get engaged in non-germane activity, such as the regulation of content or speech or conduct, and that you would permit other countries to join an agreement on the understanding that they also shared those values and they shared those beliefs. And you could even have provisions in the Constitution for supermajority type decisions or even consensus decisions would make it extremely difficult to amend or change that. So it would essentially place a very high bar in any unwanted expansion of an entity like this. Now we've asked, we're consulting with people and sort of reviewing different kinds of legal structures for various charters and things like that. But I just wanted to, run this story to say that's kind of what we had in mind, something that was actually limiting and restrictive and tried to segregate out what are these truly plumbing jobs versus things that are more ambitious, and to advise people that they should seek other venues for dealing with the more content behavioral type issues rather than ICANN. Thank you.
Is it worth there? Okay. I'd like to start out by saying that I agree with Jamie Love that we should not beat our wife, and we will not, and we will sign a contract to that. To speak honestly, I thought what he said made a whole lot of sense, and the only thing I might add is that most of those provisions, with the exception of all the government stuff, the terrestrial government stuff, is already in our bylaws in one form or another. And now I would like to just lay out, to some extent, the philosophy and purpose of ICANN, but I will do it within 10 minutes if I can. What ICANN is about is not governance of the internet. What has been going on in the last way too long a period of time has been a lot about the governance of ICANN itself, which is in the business of administering, coordinating, blah, 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 various technical infrastructure things, which you are well aware of, which could indeed be used to cut off people's identity and so forth and so on. And so we have indeed, in our charter, in the statement of what we're about, in our various contracts with various people, being very careful to limit what it is that you do, what it is that you submit, and what it is that you deal with. And that has to do with IP addresses, protocols, the domain name system, and in the domain name system, the dispute, we're setting up procedures for arbitrating, have to do with trademarks and domain names, not with whether you use bad content or somebody didn't like the things you posted or any of those other things. We're trying not to be something that can be used as an arm of government, police, big corporate interests, nutty people of all stripes, or even well-meaning people of all stripes. The goal of this organization is to keep itself and its remit very limited. How are we going to do that? Basically, I'd like to go through 4 points about how we operate. The first is, when I heard Ralph Nader start talking, I thought, oh my God, am I going to have to defend the International Monetary Fund? And I was just in Russia. I wish the International Monetary Fund could ever be remotely as accountable or transparent as ICANN is. We are not as good yet as rules oblige us to be. We are disorganized. The word chaos does indeed sometimes come in there. But we do not take decisions in secret. What we do is posted. The Government Advisory Committee may talk to us privately, but anything that we pay attention to, again, we need to post. It's simply a whole different ballgame. And I find it very frustrating because I do believe in these principles of openness and transparency, and I've seen what happens when they go wrong. I've seen the International Monetary Fund pour money quietly into a country where the money flows right out into Switzerland. I've spent a whole lot more time than most of you have in places where everything is accomplished in self building. And I'm well aware of what goes wrong when that happens. And so not only am I committed to this personally, but if you look at how we operate, the very fact that you are here criticizing us, that you are aware of what we're doing, that in fact, as Jamie said, people complained that we had closed meetings and now they are open. People complained about the domain name fee and called it a tax, and now unfortunately it's disappeared, although I personally still think it's a good idea. This organization has indeed responded to a lot of what's happening and to a lot of what is being said about it, to a lot of the criticisms and complaints. The way we make decisions is based on consensus, and I think that's the title of Don's talk, so I won't spend a great deal of time on it. But it is not voting. The problem with the way ICANN was created was that there was no electorate and no body to create it. So we had to be created somehow. And that process, as everybody knows, was messy, was not open. But the results have been very open. And our consensus process is the same. It is messy. Real life is messy. It's humans are messy. And the point of consensus as opposed to voting is to make sure that all opinions and points of view are aired and then taken into account. And as someone said earlier, it would be nice to see larger reasoning, and I agree. And we're going to try and do that better. But, yeah, our decisions have not been invisible, the reasoning has not been invisible, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I do think as time goes forward and as the board is elected, the issue of legitimacy around the determination of consensus will diminish. I certainly hope it will, and I think that is the right direction to bring it. And so, yeah, stay tuned. We're not there yet. We're trying to get there. How do we enforce the decisions that we make? We have no statutory authority. You will be inheriting in some form or another a contract between the Department of Commerce and Network Solutions, where, interestingly, again, I come from Russia. In Russia, the government would simply have shut Network Solutions down, but it probably would never have existed as a private entity. In the U.S., for better or worse, the government does not have the power to tell Network Solutions what to do. It has to live by the terms of a contract it made some time ago when it was not only not the public, but the government itself wasn't paying a whole lot of attention to the contract it was. And so, as you know, these negotiations have been protracted, and the result is something that we will indeed inherit. But aside from that, everything we do is through contracts with organizations that will then be bound only by the terms of the contract. They will not be bound by considerations about somebody's notion of freedom of speech or content or whatever. Our initial contracts, as you know, are with registrars. And they don't say that you have to close down the site because somebody doesn't like what somebody said on it. Like the contract. In the future, we hope to have contracts also with registries, with the IP registries. We have a memorandum of understanding with supporting organizations. But these things are by and large voluntary. And you heard about the alternate newspapers. They do exist. We haven't shut them down. You know, they're out there. They can continue to exist. obviously we're trying to build a single consistent system that will work. But we're not going out there and showing anybody else wrong. That's not what we're here to do. We don't have the authority to do it. And this current board doesn't want to do it. And you know, you can elect people who do want to do something else, so I hope you will elect people who want to abide by the same restrictions. Now, our big challenge going forward is the at-large membership. And here, I wouldn't say we deserve to be criticized, because we've done the best we could, but the state of affairs definitely deserves to be criticized. We do not have the at-large membership that we should have. We do not have a large number of participating individuals who seem to be working for the common good. Now, that may be unrealistic. I can't see why any individual, my sisters, for example, who are doctors, they're individuals. They're probably going to get their unions. Why should they be involved in this? You know, it's, for better or worse, for most people's lives, it's not a terribly important part of their life. Yet, at the same time, we do want people out there who've not made it a career, who are not being funded by some organization with whatever particular vested corporate or organization interest, to participate in this process and to represent the interests and individuals, the interests and points of view of individual people, whether they are commercial individuals, individuals acting in a commercial way, or individuals acting in a private non-commercial way. They like to have their domain name to express their identity, they use it to communicate with friends and relatives, whatever. And, okay, so please help us build up this membership. Help us make this organization and this cast not sound like an infight between a bunch of weird technical people and big, nasty corporations with maybe a few government tyrants. It really ought to be something different. It is a public resource in one form or another. That does not mean it needs to be, all of it needs to be managed by government. It means it needs to be coordinated at the bottom, and then I hope the market and the forces of competition can work.
Okay, thank you very much, Esther. Our next speaker is Don Palash, and we'll move right into you.
I apologize for the distraction from the video that I'm afraid the audience did. What I'd like to do is get into an issue of process. For me, that's been an important factor a long time ago. I've been in this debate for 5 years, arguably as long as anybody has been in this debate. I've probably spoken on every subject imaginable. Every aspect of the debate. And what I'd like to do today is try and become a constructive person and add some thoughts that I think would be important for you to consider independent of the structure of how we make policy change. Because I think that's the real central question in the scaling of this activity from what was a fairly small club 5 or 6 years ago to now a significant global entity. One of the key questions is kind of the mechanics of trying to preserve a process that has been historically in the internet for a long time, namely the consensus process, and scale it in a way that it meets the needs of a global public policy forum. And that is a really important question. It is a topic that a significant number of us have been discussing on and off. I mean, in fact, Esther, David Post, David Johnson, several of us, Andy Shapiro, had a culminating meeting on this out in the Aspen Institute this summer, and I think what I'd like to do today is reflect some of the consensus view that we sort of came up with, so it's not non-delizer's ideas, it's ideas that reflect in a lot of people. And it's independent of the mechanism of ICANN, it's independent of whether it's another body. I think it's basically trying to salvage what's been very good in the internet. It's self-organization. Yeah. Let me try and frame my comments in the context of ICANN, because several of us are working both as critics on the outside and, fortunately or unfortunately, as participants on the inside. I happen to sit on the main side, representing the DCRB, registered constituency, an entity of one tradition. And I am the representative of it. There are really, if you look at the hierarchy, and I have it, in my mind, the hierarchy starts with the working group, okay? And then this is basically the group where a lot of the action takes place. I'd like to discuss that in detail. Subsequently, the policymaking body within ICANN, there are three of them, the supporting organizations. The one that I sit on is called the name, the domain name supporting organization. There's a board of directors in ICANN. There is soon to be an independent review panel process, and ultimately, in the real world, in the free world, we have the proof. In my mind, these are the avenues for making, adjusting, and adopting policy in a structure much, let's assume it's ICANN today. The real, in my mind, key here is the working group report. Okay? I have been on countless email exchanges, countless surveys, countless teleconferences, and the critical issue here is to generate a report that has a sustaining life span, that follows the process and documents the process and guides the process from beginning to end in trying to develop policy. This is the key mechanism. And it must follow a standard template. The reason it needs to follow a standard template is that we need to be assured that we have a complete process accomplished. We need to be assured that, in fact, all the steps have been taken, because the process affects a large number of people. And this is the record that survives the process. This is the record that, in fact, will be used by anybody outside the process to, in fact, determine if there was, in fact, a consensus activity. This is the important document. And this is the important approach that we have tried to recommend in the name sound. Let me tell you what I think needs to be in that record, very quickly. If you've ever been into an online discussion with competing viewpoints, you know that one of the most difficult things to do is to develop a specific proposal from among the discussion. It's horrendously difficult. And the moderator or the chairman of that committee, okay, has a major activity involved in just trying to capture what the feeling is and what perhaps the several competing proposals are. We need to know in the course of the dialogue what the goals of that committee were, what the issues that need to be raised, why are we attempting a policy change now, what is the benefit of it. We need to have a complete documentation of the process from one end to the other. We need to have a description of all previous deliberations that needed to have been conducted on this. They may have occurred prior to this particular formal working group process. We need to capture this. We need to know who participated in this, what were their qualifications, and importantly, what were their affiliations, so we can get some sense as to how objective the process is. We need to make sure that there was an outreach to all of the impacted parties, not just a small set that happened to have the time today. This is an active outreach process. The working group has to be responsible enough to go out and document that they reach all the people. We need to basically have a description of the means to ensure that the process was open and transparent, so that anybody who wanted to have a say or had an input, their input was captured, and it was visible to the complete audience. We need an analysis and an assessment of the impact. We're talking about major issues here that have global impact. And you can't do these things without knowing what the thoughts are. This is one of my biggest objections to a top-down process, and that it fails to ever capture and assess the impact because the stakeholders generally who are impacted are not even involved in the process. We need a pro and con analysis and record it, because no issue is clean. Every complex policy issue worth changing is going to have strong proponents and strong opponents, and they're going to have good arguments on both sides. So it's almost always a trade-off. You need to answer carefully, for the record, the opposing views. And we need to know the distribution of the support, especially among the implementers. The implementers have the biggest job. They typically have the biggest liability, too, with implementing a policy change. So it's important that we know that. We need a list of all the factual background materials that occurs in the study. There may be lots of documentation going before it. We need analysis of the belief that the proposal enjoys a consensus. Somebody needs to draw the conclusion from the record that this was in fact a consensus approach. We need to determine that it is within the mandate and the bylaws of ICANN, going back to Mr. Nader's comment, okay? To be sure they didn't step beyond their bounds. We need to know that the uniformity has been demonstrated, okay? It has to be there. There are numerous other sub-analyses I won't go into. Are you bored yet? I hope you're bored, because what I'm trying to point out to you is that, like democracy, consensus building is a boring activity. And the real action, okay, is at the work level. The supporting organization, on the other hand, in my mind, should evaluate the working group support and the process, okay? It should, when not completely satisfied with early draft, generate a requirement for revision and augmentation. It should be a broad-focused forum, okay? It basically decides whether there was a compelling conclusion. If it isn't a compelling conclusion, it needs to reject. If there was a compelling conclusion, then it needs to forward to the board. In my mind, the board has a very minimal role in the policy process. It needs to evaluate the report that came up from the SO. It needs to evaluate the process. It needs to conduct a broad public forum on that policy change, focusing on the impacted parties to make sure they have a complete hearing. Only when that process is complete does it accept and vote to adopt the demonstration of consensus. Notice I didn't say to adopt the policy. To adopt the demonstration of consensus or to reject the conclusion that there was a consensus here. The policy decisions are made lower down in the food chain or higher up in the food chain, depending on how you view the policy. In my mind, the IRP has a similar narrow role. It evaluates the total record from the working group through the board vote. It assures a fair hearing for the dispute. It assesses that the process was compliant with the bylaws, the rules on the merits and recommends in this process. I'd like to leave you with a conclusion. The working group, in my mind, is aptly named. It's really active. And those of you that want to get involved in the process of policy making need to be prepared to donate the time and energy to chair one of these working groups on a policy you feel strongly about. The working group product is the most important guide to the process. It's what we need to learn how to do and do well, and do in a very large-scale effort. We don't know how to do that, you know. We need tools, we need process, and we don't know how to do that. And my view, neither the names council nor the vote, nor the board vote for or against an issue. They vote for or against the demonstration of a consensus process. Okay? They vote on the merits of the consensus as demonstrated by that very detailed, laboriously created, long-standing public record. And that's my fourth today. Thank you.
Our next speaker is David Post from the Beasley School of Law at Temple University.
I undoubtedly will not use up my 10 minutes since Don said a lot that it just shows how uncoordinated we really are. Lee and I can't just parcel out topics. I also wanted to talk about consensus, and I'll say a few words with a somewhat different spin than Don had. I hear ICANN to be saying that they want to, in a sense, to limit their policymaking scope, their prepared, in a sense, to tie their own hands, so that they won't do all these terrible things that says they're not interested in doing, making the global policy and continuing privacy policy for the NAFTA and all the rest. To not govern And I think that throughout this process, we've seen and we will continue to see that they are subject to and continue to be subject to enormous pressure to do otherwise. I think the goal in this is to set up a process that is as immune to that pressure to govern, if you will, as possible. We have heard ICANN and Zardesky say, and others at ICANN say that their policymaking reflects the consensus of the internet community, and I think holding them to that is one of the most important jobs that we have. When I hear, I must say I have a lot of respect for Esther. I think this has been an enormously difficult process. Mistakes have been made, but of course mistakes have been made. But the one thing, when I hear that ICANN is currently a consensus-based institution, I don't get it. I don't understand it. I don't see how it could be considered right now to be anything resembling a consensus-based process, because it takes work. I think work has not yet been done to set up an institution that is consensus-based. ICANN right now, just to throw a little legal mumbo-jumbo into the argument, ICANN is a California nonprofit corporation that is, as most nonprofit corporations or for-profit corporations in our country, is run by a board of directors. The board of directors votes on decisions. Majority votes is presumptively the rule by which they operate, to implement policies or choose not to implement policies. That to switch that, to move that so that the institution becomes something else, a truly consensus-based institution, I think takes thought and hard work, and it has not only hasn't it been accomplished, I don't even think that it has been started yet in terms of the ICANN process. But I think it is something I take Esther's comments and others and I can at face value that they're interested in turning the institution into that thing. And I think it is worth thinking a little bit, as Don has done as well, about what ICANN looks like if it is a consensus-based institution. I think the most important point from Don's work in the terms is that the role of the board of directors changes fundamentally. This is right against that. I would like to see the ICANN board, in fact, say that they're not so much making decisions, they're not really a decision-making body, or they are really making only a single decision. And the single decision is, was there a demonstrable consensus about a particular policy that they are going to have to adopt? I don't think good rules about electing directors is a substitute for a process that produces consensus. If you need better rules in ICANN for the election of directors, for setting up an at-large membership and the like. But that alone is no guarantee that the board, however it is elected, is in fact charged with its most fundamental, but in a sense simple task, which is to ratify that there is a consensus on a particular policy or to demand more evidence that such a consensus is good. You know, when we talk about this, the question about what is a consensus? What does it mean? And using this word probably means different things to different people. It's a very difficult concept to pin down. I don't think it is susceptible to a simple definition. I don't think I can write down the definition of what consensus is. Because it is entirely context dependent, it depends upon what the issue is. I tell the story of my son's soccer team. I am the manager, God help me, of my son's soccer team. He's been dealing with all the parents, and we operate by consensus. Well, that means sometimes if two people feel really strongly about something, you don't do it, about not doing something. We say there's no consensus on that. And with respect to other decisions, four or five of the parents might object to not strongly enough, and they really can't articulate their reasons, and you could say there is a consensus on that. I mean, you can't really specify in advance exactly what you mean. It is not a two-thirds voting, or three-quarters voting, or four-fifths voting, or majority voting. The intensity of the objections to particular policies, the reasonableness of the objections, and where they are coming from all necessarily have to be considered in terms of assessing whether or not there is
consensus, whether or not there is substantial, reasonable disagreement about a particular policy is a necessarily conflict between an operation. So I like Don's, I guess I will end by saying that I really endorse the list. I mean, this is this independently. I didn't know you were going to talk about this. But I think that's a very good start to thinking about the process by which this becomes consensus-based, that you make the consensus process itself transparent. You demand a kind of documentation, a record of the openness of the process, the different views that were expressed during the process, the arguments on both sides, that there was a burden on these working groups to demonstrate that there was enough time for deliberation, that opposing views were at least invited and were heard, and that there is a consensus because, and they fill in the default, and send that up this chain of social super supporting organizations and the board, and ultimately, if necessary, to an independent review panel to determine whether or not that was reasonable in any particular circumstance. So I'll stop there, and in case you just want to probably know a good deal more about the consensus process than some of us on the panel, I think it's just the discussion of that in the next session.
Thanks very much, David Post. Our next speaker is Paul Scalise. He's a staff member of the House Committee on Commerce.
Think of it as company Scalise. I think must admit, I feel slightly uncomfortable today. I'm usually not on this side of the microphone. I think I know what it's like when individuals have to come and testify. What I wanted to talk about is a little bit of the role of Congress as a participant in this. I think we're at an important point now in the governance of the Internet. I think that's a very good word to use because this is talking about governance. As the Internet has become open to millions of Americans, there's undoubtedly differences of opinion, different views on a variety of subjects. And these different views lead to disputes. And I think that everyone would agree that we do need some sort of governance to deal with disputes, how people have sustained and they have legitimate viewpoints on issues, but they disagree on exactly how they should be done, whether that we should collect private personal information or whether it should be secret. There's a wide range, so I think governance is an important issue to talk about. I think we should differentiate that between governance and government. I think we're seeing a transition of the naming system from something that the United States government has ran for many years, moving it towards the private sector. What exactly the private sector is could be corporations, individuals, nonprofits, kind of a wide range of individuals. But I think government does have a role somewhere in that structure of governance because, as I said, some of these disputes will need governments, perhaps need governments to solve them. What I want to talk about is, really focus on is, what are the issues Congress is concerned about in the debate here? I think if we take a look at the way Congress thinks of things, Congress obviously passes the laws. The executive branch administers those laws, and then there's times where the courts will say, you've overstepped your bounds, you've overstepped the Constitution, what you've done is incorrect, we're not going to allow it, we're going to strike down that law. I think so that, thinking through that filter, I want to talk about a couple of the issues that Congress is looking at. One of them, obviously, first, is the issue of legitimacy. We're not talking about who owns the Internet. We're talking about who actually has the authority to make decisions affecting the future of the Internet. Is it the Department of Commerce that has this authority? Is it ICANN, the United States Congress, some other sort of body? I think it's an important point to talk about legitimacy. Obviously, if we're going to have a body that does not have legitimacy, we're going to have problems getting people to adhere to the decisions that are being made. And I think there probably are still some unanswered questions that we are taking a look at. Specifically, does the United States government have the authority to make these decisions, or these management functions? I think there's still some questions out there as to what exactly, questions have come up. What is NSI? Do they have ownership in certain areas? The Department of Commerce have ownership? And I think these are decisions that were, or issues that we're taking a look at. Another issue is authority. Kind of ties in with legitimacy. Who has the authority to make decisions? Is it these individual bodies? Do we have to have the Department of Commerce? Do we have to have Congress come in and definitively say, you know, we give a grant of authority to one of these bodies? Other areas, Mr. Tyson in particular, is kind of the way Congress works, is talking about fairness and openness. This involves who is allowed to participate in the government. Is it going to be just intellectual property, intellectual property communities, corporations, or are we going to have individuals, nonprofits? That's the role for some government there. Also talk about openness, transparency of the decision-making process. I think that is more than just open board meetings. It's that their individuals have a right to come up and make a public comment, that decisions I can make open for public comment, that people feel that there is a decision-making process, that the decision doesn't go into a black box and then somehow some policy statement comes out and no one has any idea of where the statement or the policy came from. That also involves, in this area too, is preventing capture by one particular body, one particular government, that seems like something we all take a look at. Probably the one issue that has troubled Congress or has given Congress a pause is, what is the role of ICANN? Is it a management role or is it a regulatory role? We're looking at something simply as management functions, you know, the old IANA functions. Is it going to be merely technical management or is it going to be something more than that? And I think what some in Congress are saying, do we need to have a bright line? Do we need to have a defined box and say, ICANN has authority over X, Y, and Z, but when it comes beyond that, there's some additional body that needs to be consulted, Congress, international treaty organization, so forth. What exactly is the role of ICANN? I think that's something that Congress has struggled with. I know when we were having hearings, we were doing some of the staff briefings, briefings to members, people asking the question, well, who is ICANN? Where do they come from? I never heard of ICANN. But, who gives them this grant of authority? So I think you need to have some clarification and understanding in that area. Another issue that Congress thinks about, and it has not been discussed as much, is some of the international implications. just comes back to the point of ICANN currently really has, let's say, jurisdiction or authority over the generic top level domain. But what can they do to have the bring the CCPLD under their authority or under their jurisdiction? And you think about it, if you're the, you know, the king of Tonga, the president of Zimbabwe, they would probably ask themselves, well, who is ICANN? Why should my government recognize their authority to control the domain that my government is currently running? There's also some concerns that Congress has, perhaps about the international aspect of foreign governments that perhaps have a different view on the way the Internet is run. If you take a look at some of the decisions the European Union has made recently in this area, if you look at their data privacy protection initiative, which I think is a pretty different model of privacy protection than we have in the United States. Or if you look at what, for example, Germany has done on the digital signature law, they have a very strict regime. If you're not, you don't fall under the regime, they don't recognize any other sort of technology. So I think there are some concerns that Congress has about the, not just the Europeans, but other countries that don't have the same approach that the United States has in having a large role for the private sector, and also respecting the, you know, constitutional rights, the First Amendment. A lot of countries around the world are participating that don't have a First Amendment. And what impact does that have, or what thinking does that bring to the table by these foreign governments? Just to close, I just want to talk about briefly about what Congress has done and what Congress might be doing. The House Commerce Committee had its first hearing on the domain name system last June, a few days after the white paper came out, and we got the lay of the land. That was followed by the hearing that many of you may have seen, read about in July, and it brought all of the interested parties and the observers, some of whom are at the table and in the audience, to come and testify about what is the current state, what does the future hold. I think the Congress feels very strongly that we have a constitutional duty to oversee not only what the Department of Commerce does, obviously we have to oversee the executive branch, but any agency or body, what have you, that wants to take a strong role in managing the Internet, which is in the engine of our economy. We need to see that this body operates in open, that it has clear decision-making process and subject to tax and so forth. I know that some individuals say, well, what Congress really needs to do to kind of clarify the whole thing and so that they no longer need to be involved, just give kind of the stamp of approval to the process. Come in and say very clearly that, yes, the Department of Commerce and the U.S. has authority over X, Y, and Z, and that they actually have the legal authority to transfer to another body. I think we need to wait and see the negotiations that are going on in between the Department of Commerce and the NSI, and I can include it. We need to see what those agreements look like, and then I think we'll take another look at them and see how we want to proceed in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Paul Scalise. And our final speaker in this series is Todd Cohen, Vice President of New Media from the Motion Pictures Association.
Good afternoon. My name is Todd Cohen with the MPAA, and let me answer first the two questions that I know that are on everyone's mind. One, have I ever been to the Oscars? The answer is no. And two, why does the Motion Picture Association care about the domain name? Basically, as it comes down to what is it that people want on the Internet. And we can talk a lot about chat rooms, and we can discuss a lot about a lot of other functions, but if you look at what people are searching for now on the Internet, after sex, it's the number two most searched term right now are MP3 files. And those are music files. And in most instances, let's not kid ourselves, most instances, those are illegal MP3 files. Because it's not as if you want to listen to, that's the bottom line. The question is, do you want to listen to my music, Todd Cohen's music, or do you want to listen to a recording artist that somebody who can really perform music? And that's what you want to listen to. So we can play and discuss about whether it's right to download and whether it's appropriate or not, but let me give you the bottom line. We're going to protect ourselves. So the question is, how do we protect ourselves? How do we protect our owners and our creative artists' work, and what are the consequences for everybody else? So right now, as I said, MP3s are one of the most searched terms on the internet. And I, like I said also, I represent the 7 major motion picture studios in the United States. We will protect ourselves, but it is the other countries' films that are at risk in the internet without proper protection. We can say here today that the Brazilian music industry has collapsed, not because Madonna's albums are not being sold there, it's because the Brazilian artists themselves have been pirated completely. The Hong Kong film industry is not under threat because of Star Wars. The Hong Kong film industry is under threat because of pirates who pirate their own films. Let me give you another example. The Swedish Encyclopedia, that has been placed there in Carta, was placed onto CD-ROM 2 years ago. And they didn't understand why they weren't making any sales. Sweden has an incredibly high penetration rate for computer programs and computers. And the reason why is because CD-ROM pirates had gone around and done it to the Swedish Encyclopedia. Now, Microsoft is protecting itself in Sweden, but the Swedish encyclopedias may not receive the same level of protection. So when it comes to the domain name system, you have to say, are the big companies going to protect themselves? And the answer is going to be yes. But at what cost to everybody else and to other cultures and other industries? And you can look at the internet as an opportunity, as a phenomenal opportunity for Brazilian music. Or you can look at it as a great threat. And part of our job is to make sure we protect ourselves, and we are hopeful that others get protected at the same time. Now, lots of people in this room, I'm sure, believe that intellectual property is invalid. It's not the proper area of discussion. It's not my only point here today. Free speech is thought of as improper. Parody is thought of improper throughout many other areas of the world. So we also have to determine, are we imposing our cultural ideas upon other people when we advocate, quote, free speech on the internet? I'm not saying we shouldn't advocate free speech on the internet, but I'm also saying that we also have to, quote, respect other cultures and their beliefs in this. Now, trademarks, as we all know, get a very bad name among some of the people in the crowd. Now, trademark has two purposes. One is to protect the brand owner, and the second reason is to protect individuals so they're not misled. So you can say, well, the individual consumer out there, the individual human being that wants to purchase things on the internet, deserves no protection whatsoever. But the domain name system can be helpful in providing some protection. So as I said, when it comes to ICANN, the Motion Picture Association, and some of the other copyright and intellectual property industries care about it because our materials are on the internet, and we want to make it a distribution medium that all can use. And then it comes down to people talk about the WHOIS database, and whether that is a private database, and whether it's something that individuals should not have access to. Well, first off, let me posit one thing. I believe there is a fundamental difference between individuals searching the internet and individuals and entities posting things and posting sites on the internet. I believe they deserve different levels of protection. That's my first most important posit. The second thing is that if you choose to close off access to the WHOIS database to the general public, you're not closing off access to my company. You're not going to be closing off access to other vendors. You're not going to be closing off access to other governments. We will obtain the information, be it through subpoena, be it through licenses, be it through at a cost, be it through a whole series of different ways that information will be distributed and knowable to a whole group of people. When you talk about closing the WHOIS database, you're talking about closing it to the general public. And when you talk about closing it to the general public, then you're saying that the general public loses a tool to find out who they're dealing with on the internet. There's a privacy group called Junk Busters right now that on their website describes how you can stop spam. And one of the things they tell you to do is to go to the WHOIS database to find out who provided you the spam, and then send that to your internet service provider. Now, if the WHOIS database is closed, then you've as an individual lost the opportunity to try to find out who is sending you that spam. The same thing with stalking online. The same thing with security fraud. We don't always, and we can't rely always upon the government and the police and the intellectual property owners to do all the policing on the internet. We expect, and I hope, and I have enough respect for individuals, that they should be granted some tools. They should be able to find out who they're dealing with on the internet. They shouldn't be confronted with having to pay for a license to gain access to whose database they, whose website they visited. So I do believe that there should be trust for individuals. But I also believe that we should talk about alternative ways for people that believe that they should have some privacy when they register a domain name. Right now we talk about, all we're talking about when it comes to the domain name system is the second level domain name. There is no prohibition. I can't go to a third level domain provider, for example, AOL. If you choose to have a site on AOL, so it's toddcrowan.aol.com, all my information is kept private by AOL. So there are alternative ways that if you believe you need the privacy protection when you host your website, that you can do it through GeoCities, through AOL, through all kinds of other internet service providers. So there are alternatives that exist for you. They may not be perfect. Nothing is perfect. And they may not protect you from the Serbian government. But I don't believe that the domain name system, if we, quote, make it private in the sense of closing off access to the WHOIS database, that the Serbian government's not going to get access, or the Chinese government. So that's why we're in this. Because our materials are being stolen. It may not be, we may not say that this is, it's one of the reasons. We can say, my ultimate responsibility is to protect my members' property. But at the cost of other people, you have to make that decision. And work within, working within ICANN is something we're going to be doing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Todd Cohen. Okay, we're now going to have discussion here on the panel. Step two, step three is a broader discussion. And so I'm going to give everybody some time for some quick comments, reactions, and pose questions. To start with Jamie, you were the first one before. So.
I think the presentation we just heard is a pretty good indication of the kind of problems that have come up with the ICANN, and that is that, as Professor Miller pointed out earlier, is ICANN going to be used as an instrument of surveillance? I mean, are companies going to try and get ICANN to become kind of a system of surveillance and enforcement for different kinds of claims they have in certain areas? I just wanted to see. I remember I had a conversation earlier with Esther Dyson, where I asked if ICANN was truly democratic and he ran a slate of pro-privacy people, could then we like implement as a condition of having a .com registration the privacy policy you like requiring companies to post their privacy policies or something like that. And she said that technically speaking, if we were to get enough votes from the board of directors, we could do that, but we would probably never be able to accomplish that because about half the seats in the board of directors were for these groups, and that the presence of e-commerce firms in the ICANN structure was so strong that like ordinary consumer groups and things like that would probably never really be able to prevail, and that had some benefits because you know we just wouldn't risk that problem happening there. Now, in a sense, I think you have a risk of the other problem, which is the sense that you run the risk of getting into these areas where the individuals and consumer groups can never realistically expect to ever have enough votes to overcome big business interests like the MPAA interests that are, or a telephone company that's going to be kind of the most powerful group in the current ICANN structure. So I'm just saying from our group, we have a concern that if you permit ICANN to get into a wide range of areas, it's a very unbalanced sort of a structure. So that's one of the reasons why we like the idea of the sort of bright line that the Congress is talking about is what is ICANN and what is ICANN not. And so I think that protects everybody if there's this bright line around ICANN. And I also think that not every decision ICANN is going to make is going to be a consensus type topic. And there's things where, as we pointed out earlier, by Professor Clinton and others, that there's some winners and losers in some of these decisions. And so in areas where there's winners and losers, let's not kid ourselves about whether consensus is going to be able to solve all the problems. And so given that, you know, that's why we want some clear idea of what this group can do and what it can't do.
Esther, you want to?
Three things. Let me say once again, consensus does not mean unanimity. Please go look at what Don gave an excellent, wonderful speech, and I think what he outlined, you know, I didn't say it was perfect because then I'd find some nit. But fundamentally, that is very different from saying there are going to be no winners and no losers. Second, I did not say what you said. I said you can say it, but I didn't say it. And third, Ray gave a close discussion. If you look at our bylaws, yes, indeed, we do need to vote not on policies, but on the recognition of consensus around policies. And that means there will be some policies around which there is consensus, and we will still have winners and losers. And there will be some policies around which there is no consensus. And then, for better or worse, we will have to recognize that there's no consensus and we can't make a decision. So that's all I have to say for now.
Don, do you want to take a comment or come back to you?
Actually, I share views of both speakers here on this issue. Certainly, I'm concerned about the privacy reasons for individuals. We're required by the United States government in our cooperative agreement to make all the data in the WHO is publicly available. And a few million of those records are businesses, small businesses, and big agencies. But several million of those records are individuals. And so there is a kind of a nagging issue in not being allowed to allow those individuals any kind of a way to avoid having their personal data on the net. On the other hand, I am very much concerned about the kinds of abuses of the law that Todd spoke so carefully about here, and maybe not very popularly, but it's true. People invest money in intellectual property. They have a right to have a tool or mechanism to deal with it. The distinction that I like to make, is a distinction between access and public disclosure. Certainly, our technical means, well within NSI's grasp, if allowed by the Department of Commerce, to in fact provide access under secure arrangements with all those agencies' elements that need to police their intellectual property. At the same time, for the public, we could provide a opt-out policy from the public disclosure of their records, making a distinction here between access by policing elements and general public disclosure, but we currently do not have the right to do that. Our contract prohibits.
Okay, and continuing in the series.
First time around, I was just so infuriated by a couple of things, and I sort of forgot what I really wanted to address. And let me just pick up on this topic of privacy versus disclosure, et cetera, et cetera. There are some things, Todd, that I agree with, some I don't, but I do want to make the distinction between disclosing the information so that the copyright people, whether you consider them goons or self-protectors, can go after infringers, and ICANN itself being a tool for the police and the copyright. There's no suggestion here that MPAA or anyone else can come to us and ask us to close them in people's sites. The issue here is the information about who owns a particular site publicly available? And there I have to say, this is not an ICANN policy. It doesn't exist yet, but I have to say that I find his argument that the big companies will find their ways, the large governments will find their ways anyway, so it would be simply closing off access to the little guys, a fairly compelling argument. There are issues, very important issues, vis-a-vis anonymity and freedom of speech. And there are ways to deal with them. I'm not sure that, you know, the Serbian freedom fighters necessarily want to get a site in GeoCities. this in the end is not an ICANN issue. There should be affordances for anonymity. There should be lots of different varieties of things, but I think fundamentally the notion that the who is data is public in some form or another is a very important one.
As the only person I think on this panel who has actual MP3 files on a website, anybody else there?
Nice.
I talked to either Tony. I touched up at Todd Stone. But I think quite apart from the substantive debate about the property, which is an important one and a complicated one, I think, like Jamie said, and I just want to emphasize again, I think it illustrates the danger here, the danger with respect to ICANN, that any number of those groups with some with good agendas, however one would want to define those, some with bad agendas, are going to be knocking on ICANN's door to implement some particular policy that does what they think it may be in good faith is best for the internet. And I think what we're talking about here is the process, and Esther can say that's not an ICANN function. But Esther's not going to be on the board for much longer.
It's not just me, it's our bylaws, it is the consensus policies, all those things we've talked about.
And if those things are in place, I mean, if we are satisfied as a community that there are real enforceable limitations, I am not yet satisfied that there are real enforceable limitations on ICANN freedom of action, so that they will be able to resist, even should they want to, that they will be able to resist the kind of pressure that groups like Todd, and again, in good faith, are going to be bringing to the table and demanding that they act on. I think that is, if you trust an institution like that that can resist those, can stay within its bounds, it's a difficult task, and I don't think we're there with ICANN yet by a long time.
I'm next to your fall. I think it's a fair statement that Esther made about whether the domain name system or ICANN becomes a tool for intellectual property owners to use their pieces. One, we haven't asked. Two, it probably wouldn't be what we would want to have before. So there are plenty of avenues for us to obtain protection. There are plenty of ways for us to go about doing it. This is just one of many, many different locations in which we're going to go out to try to protect our rights. And it may be ICANN is just, you know, we have to deal with every one of the individual CCCLDs to protect our rights already. There are many different pieces that are already in place in which we do it. We also have to go to every single ISP and deal with it on a different level there. So I'm not particularly concerned about, I think David's point is probably from the wrong side. My personal feeling, and I always get beaten up on this because, remember, most of my companies have said to me, let's just get a license for the Whois database and be done with it. And I take the position that the individual rights access, because one, we retain, plenty of people call us and send us emails saying that, you know, they found illegal material on the site. But the other thing is I do believe that individuals have an access right. And I do believe that ICANN is probably the best mechanism for individuals than necessarily going through the Congress or other structures that can be created. That's Amy.
Right now you're hearing about issues about getting individual information so they can pursue enforcement actions. But in fact, in 1996 in Geneva, the World Intellectual Property Organization, when they considered treaties on digital copyright, MPAA and others were actually seeking rules that would have made it illegal to make even a computer, a personal computer, an illegal device because of their anti-circumvention provisions in the treaty, which they were, by the way, defeated on by a coalition that we were a part of. The WTO right now is considering numerous proposals to put in place various mechanisms getting at these intellectual property enforcement, and some which I would support because I agree with Todd, it's important to protect intellectual property, and some I would oppose, and we draw the line at different places. But some are extremely intrusive in terms of tracking information from one person to another, and there's an issue about ICANN's role in protocol and whether or not ICANN, down the road, as groups like Todd assert their influence on this group and can attend these meetings in San Diego and places like this and sort of manipulate the process, whether or not they can sort of use that process to ram down your throat very restrictive policies. They've tried to get in the U.S. Congress, they've tried to get in Geneva, they tried and failed in the United States Congress and failed in Geneva, whether they could succeed, not with Esther, who I think would fight the good fight on this, but with Esther's successors, not all of which I would actually have as much confidence in as I would her. So, you know, that's why we like what Paul was saying about a bright line. I mean, we feel like if ICANN is a plumber, it's one thing. If they're the plumbers, it's another thing, you know?
Okay. We've got about another 35 minutes. We're going to open it up and make it more interesting to take questions from the audience, and I'm going to give myself the first question. Sorry, Rick. But my first question is the following. To Don Pellet and David Post and Paul Scalise, you guys talked a lot about the importance of the process, doing through the right process. And I look at those procedural steps, and it seems very complicated and it seems time-consuming. And when I have raised those kinds of issues from ICANN supporters that I've spoken to, they have generally used a term that we're probably all here familiar with, and that term is MSI shill. That is, they say, oh, you're just trying to delay things because every day of delay is $1 million in the pocket of Network Solutions Incorporated. That's what's really going on here. So how do you respond to this? That these procedures, these complicated processes for consensus sounds like they'll be very favorable to some of the stakeholders.
First of all, I'd like to point out to everybody here who may not know the sequence of events. We've been trying to get competition in the .com domain since 1997. I can show you letters written to the National Science Foundation. They were not prepared to take the policy issue on. Okay. Several months after the white paper was published in June, we basically negotiated Amendment 11, which is an agreement change to our cooperative agreement with the Department of Commerce, which called for us to implement a competitive system at our own expense within 6 months. That was done, completed, $25 million worth of our money. We currently have 12 competitors, including such giants as France Telecom, AOL, okay, around the world, competing with us in .com, .net, and .org. Very competitive system. There are how many of us? 74 total in the works, and they're basically being engineered into the system. So, frankly, the issue of competition is an issue that doesn't really impact IT. It is an issue that was settled between Network Solutions and the Department of Commerce last October. The issue of new top-level domains is not a decision I get to make. Okay? It is a decision, though, those of you who have seen the public record, that we have, in fact, requested permission to introduce new top-level domains back prior to the Department of Commerce case. I don't get to make that policy decision. I have letters from the Department of Commerce and from the National Science Foundation informing me that policy control over the route belongs to the United States government. So, with all due respect, it's not my choice. Nor is it Esther. I not want to be defending her or ICANN in this process. That's a complicated issue which no one basically has been prepared to grapple with, including our friends at Congress. Okay? As far as the issue of the process, okay, the policy process, by no means am I the only person who feels that the development of the process, okay, is a critical issue. I can remember having discussions with many of you as far back as the Boston IFWC meeting when it was clear that the debate, okay, was just debate because we hadn't really given significant thought about the process that we were going through. And the process of consensus has been the last issue even have anyone give any serious thought about. And that occurred basically last spring in this summer.
Now, we'll take some more questions, keep them short to the point, and we'll... I'm sorry.
I had assumed that I'll probably get the first or the second question to them. That's an incorrect, I would say, not only incorrect assertion, I think also an unfair assertion. There are legitimate concerns over hiking in this country. I think people who have legitimate concerns have to consider they should go in one party or the other. Process is very important. I mean, we have a process in Congress. We have constituents that strike with congressmen and other interests, and we have a public debate and get all the sides out, all the sides have a chance to be heard, and then we vote. That this process is important. It provides buy-in for those people who are being held. If you don't have the opportunity to come and defend the point of view, you really don't have any interest in the case and what's going to figure it out. We have laws that need to be followed. We have procedures that should be followed. I'm sure that's still bothering some of you. Establish a policy that affects everyone.
But I do get two microphones.
I guess I just want to second that process. If there's a compelling need, I suppose, to act, compelling need in terms of the future of the internet, to act quickly, then much of the process and the structure that you're talking about building for ICANN, I suppose, could and should be defensive. I don't see that. And I think if we're committed to building this as an institution that is defined within some bounds, and the bounds is these enormously complicated different interests, then I think that is going to take time. It takes time to build a global decision-making process of this kind, building a global consensus or taking action that is globally implemented with respect to these issues. I think it is, unless someone tells me that the net's going to break tomorrow if we don't act, I think it is advisable that we take the time that is needed to come up with a structure that will last us beyond the attention span of those of us who may be on the table and in the future.
Okay, next question. Please identify yourself.
Rick Barry, Barry Associates, consultant with CPSR. I wanted to pick up on the idea about fencing questions of the institution. The picture is the name of the thing that's going to start to be. Because it comes from the organization called the Literature and Research, and it is used to get the greatest buy-in of the organization model, the organization's aim, and the organization's processes. And in that context, it normally means that option that all, or the least number of people, don't object to, which is quite different from the lowest common denominator, which is further down the scale of moderate. But it's extremely important because it's quite different from the democratic elected of officers. And in fact, ideally, it would be we not have winners in nature. We would have all winners, just not at the highest level that they might reach. And everybody would have, some element of what it was that they most demanded. I mean, they're so I guess in this light, I think we decide talking about more governance. Are we looking for democracy at that level or officers election? Do we really want consensus? And if so, I put it to the panel, do you think with stakeholder variety that we have here, is there the likelihood or possibility of reaching that?
Occasionally.
And if not, I think one of the, we're talking about limiting ICANN's
scope of action in the way. And I don't think there is a global consensus on what to do about MP3, for example. I think there are competing visions of that, and there should be, perhaps. And that would mean ICANN will not act with respect to this model seriously. ICANN would not make policy in that sphere. I think that is one of the ways, precisely because consensus is difficult to achieve, that it would serve in a way to keep ICANN within relative to the promise, to keep ICANN within relatively non-controversial terms.
Just to make it clear, there are two restrictions on what we can do. And even if we had consensus, we're not allowed to make policy about MP3. There's restrictions as to subject matter, as well as restrictions about the requirements for consensus.
Yeah, I'd like to put a little historical perspective on these questions. I think it's important. You know, I've been part of the debate where the community, and I'll use that term loosely because it's a term I never understood throughout the time, but I think it meant the people who were active in the debate at the time. The community, okay, basically elected in the public policy process that the United States government got involved in, the Notice of Issue, the Green Paper, and the White Paper, to try and do self-governance. Okay? That's what they called self-governance. And what they were going for is a mechanism that was very much like the mechanism the Internet had used, and it was a very small cadre for years and years and years. They desperately wanted to preserve that mechanism. And one of the underlying processes in that mechanism that worked well when there was a single culture and a small group of people who knew each other well on the Internet was the consensus process. So what we are grappling with here, just from a historical point of view, we are attempting to take what has worked well in a single cultural, small, closely affiliated group of people for 15 or 20 years, and they're trying to scale it to a global, multicultural, okay, situation where people don't get to communicate as easily as they did before, and they don't have a single location. That's hard. There's no guarantee that will succeed. Okay? There's no guarantee that things will be done expediently. Okay? This is not a this bam, thank you ma'am kind of problem. This is a very, very difficult, challenging thing we have taken on. And those of you who don't have the stomach for it should leave, because it's going to be years. I've been at 5.
Carl,
I won't direct that. As the last speaker, I just want to point out that in my daytime job, I'm building products that move DVD quality video over the network, and I think that's the value of Lion for the entire industry. And I am extremely concerned about protecting your legitimately IP rights in those products. I'm also a member of the California Bar of Noise Protection. So I believe strongly in intellectual property rights. I own several myself. However, I would suggest that is completely out of scope for ICANN for them to consider the impact of their decision on what on protecting your property is out of scope. So I would suggest the bright line standard by which we measure whether something is technical coordination or not. And that is, if a wrong decision is made and it has an immediate and direct impact on the ability of the Internet to deliver its fundamental service, in particular the end-to-end transport of IP packets, then and only then is it technical coordination. Anything beyond that is politics. That is a very bright line standard. And I would suggest that today, virtually everything ICANN has done is beyond that standard. Secondly, my second point is, the term consensus is a muddle-headed, fuzzy-minded, new-age, politically correct euphemism. Consensus means the tyranny of the chairman. What we need is a process in which there are clearly stated, written, clearly articulated issues with explicit, counted votes. We need to eliminate this nonsense called consensus. Otherwise, we have no accountability.
Okay, who determines who votes, Carl?
Anybody who shows up. The first step.
Shows up in Santiago? shows
us on the internet electronically. We have that vehicle.
Jeff Williams?
Yes. One boat.
How many?
As many as he can create. We have not proven that's a dangerous situation yet.
And
until we know that there is going to be an actual fraud of actual levels of where we'd be concerned about it, then we shouldn't have to break the system. Right now we've broken the at-large because of fear of fraud.
Thank you, Carl Auerbach from the IMDMC. Sorry. Introduce yourself, please.
I'm Nikki Berry from DNS, the IMDNO, and all the other acronyms you can call it. I just wanted to follow on to what Carl said. I'm terrified whenever I hear the word copyright in an internet governance context. The reason is because copyright is by definition content-oriented and therefore content-controlled. We already have the general code under the tent in the domain and dispute policy saying that trademarks are somehow related to the technical function of the DNS system. This, of course, is not true. The DNS doesn't give a whit whether McDonald's.com maps the McDonald's restaurant or the Scottish sheep farmer in Scotland. What I'd like to know is how we can stop this kind of expansion from occurring in the future, especially as people have said, when Esther is not on the board anymore and we have many more who disagree with her policy.
I think that the key is what Carl said before, which is that the belief that the technical system somehow doesn't determine winners or losers and doesn't get just as much part of the global multinational piece. Because every single time that the DNS system gets in play, every single time one of my company's movies gets sent over the internet, that's cash in somebody else's pocket. So let's not play this game in which it's individuals on one side, evil multinational companies on the other side. When Jamie talks about earlier about anti-circumvention devices, it's not like you or I are making any of these MP3 hardware. It's a major multinational. It's Fujitsu, or it's the Japanese, or it's Diamond Rio. There are many other corporate entities that are just as much involved in this, on, quote, the good side, as the content producers are on the other side. So you can divorce content from the internet, but it's what people want.
So I would calculate that that's not the realm of internet governance. It is the realm of intellectual property governance, which is traditionally dealt with by government and by court systems, not by a corporation, multinational or not, making those types of decisions.
You know, part of the issue is that there's a wide range of people that feel they have good causes. I mean, Todd, he's probably more likely to be the chairman of ICANN today than I am, you know, has a different set of ideas than I have. I might have a different set. But I think one of the issues for ICANN is whether or not we think it's a good idea to have a bright line around ICANN which says no matter how appealing you may think the idea is, ICANN's not the entity that's going to deal with this issue. You have to sort of solve your problems elsewhere. ICANN's not an international police, which is essentially it's our concern. Now, everyone has the reasons they want to call the cops for. I mean, I like the police myself, and there's times that I call the police, and times probably the police go after me, you know. But I mean, you know, I sort of accept it. But I don't really want that to be a private sector function. I sort of see that as sort of fundamentally, as the chief has said, related to government. And so, but that's an issue. And if you're going to make ICANN get into these content issues, if you're going to get into these substantive issues, then you can't have a board where half the members come out of big e-commerce firms right off the bat before you even start, and then decide to come up with a popular membership 5 years down the road. I mean, you really have to say, if you're going to get into real stuff, real governance, then build a real government, you know? Not like one person, half a vote, but, you know, I mean, or whatever, but I mean like a real democracy. And if you want to sort of make it like, you know, narrow, technical, plumbing only, who cares who's on the board of directors at a certain point, right? So, I mean, you know, that's kind of a policy decision you make.
I have a question. may already have the slash and just code. Part a little bit that you're talking much about consensus right now. I don't know if we should have been not worried because of all these complicated processes to ensure that there is consensus within ICANN, within the making of the recommendation process. For like Sir Milosevic and the general, they ask by consensus. We didn't have consensus, we can just go from the village. I know that's a rather extreme thing, but consensus is not all you need for democracy, for legitimacy. And just focusing on consensus seems a little just not enough to assure us that, that the right governance process is followed.
Well, that's a difficult question to address. Let me just say that the idea of consensus was neither David's nor mine, I suspect. In fact, is a concept that is part and parcel of the policy recommendation by the United States government, specifically President Clinton, published on June 2nd, 1992, as the government's decision on the way forward, specifically called out in that document. What we have been trying to do, we've been trying to criticize and be constructive, is trying to follow that policy procurement, the policy recommendation that came out of the White House, and trying to make it work and to, as I said earlier, preserve as much of the mechanisms of the Internet as possible as the Internet can. I have no way of knowing whether what we're doing will evolve away from that. I'm certainly not knowledgeable to know how this is all going to turn out. But in the context of trying to make that policy recommendation work, okay, we spent a lot of hard hours thinking about the details.
Yeah,
it was a
A few thoughts, and also with reference to Nikki's question, which is something for me to follow up on. First of all, I think